Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro. Would you agree with that, Ray? Do you think the Leafs are better today than they were game one?
No, and as you know, that really bugs me to agree with anything that you say.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like that's always a concern of mine. It makes me think I've lost the plot.
Right. No, you're with the plot, man. This is the you're welcome to the light side. This isn't the dark side. This is the bright side.
Because when I look at them, like, so what have been the positives since the start of the year? Certainly Johnsson and Kapanen, you know, you would have to say are unexpectedly at 19 and 20 goals. And I would say the a player I think is going to make himself noticed in the playoffs, just given Babcock's coaching history too, is Trevor Moore. I think we'll come out of the playoffs saying, wow, he's better than we thought. So I think those things are positives. Riley, Tavares, Marner, Anderson have had amazing years. There's been ups and downs from Matthews. But to say the team is better now, they don't defend measurably better. And they're certainly not scoring like they did in October because, well, nobody does. Nobody scores like they do in October by the time they get to the end of March. So I would say my biggest concern is that they haven't been able, even for, you know, a relatively extended period of time, look like a team that's just ready to button it down, like to just be really solid, really connected from offense to defense, defense to offense. They don't look like that team to me. And so the dangerous part, as I see it, is that the best games they, or the best times they play are when it's just wide open and flying. And those teams generally don't do very well in the playoffs. Like last night, they were dead asleep and they're down 5-0. Then it turns into a basically a full court press and the Blackhawks can't keep up. So you either play that way or you've got to play the lockdown game, and they don't seem to have that. And that would be my biggest concern.
Well, is that on Babcock? Like, do you think Babcock can do anything differently between now and 3 weeks from now?
Not necessarily, because certainly you can't change the team. The style of the players is already, you know, it's in, right? Like they are what they are. You're not all of a sudden going to turn everybody into a bunch of tenacious 200-foot players. That doesn't happen. So you have, you know, and I'll say this, you have to hope, but I think the other teams do the same thing. You have to hope that the players you assemble when you start a playoff series are going to play the style that you believe your team can play longer than the other guys can play the style that they play. Like Boston's going to play a pretty predictable game. I mean, if they get their players back, I'm in Winnipeg, I'm doing the game tonight. They got six regulars out, three of their defense and three of their top four wingers are out of the lineup. Yet their style doesn't necessarily change. They're not as good, but it doesn't change. And I don't know that I think that's the biggest challenge for the Leafs when they get into this series. Like when I was listening, Dave, you know, you were saying like everybody knows like, you know, they're playing. Of course, they still can get home ice. Boston doesn't have any players. It's entirely predictable that after a long winning streak like they had, they go 19 games without a regulation loss,
yeah,
that they're going to stumble around for a week or 10 days. It's entirely predictable. They've given up 11 goals in their last two games. So is it possible you could put together a couple of wins? Sure. Look at Toronto's schedule coming up. Like there's points sitting there to take. I think it's seven of their next eight games are against teams that aren't in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure, right?
There. They might go on one of those runs that Boston just went on. But does that make them better? I don't know. I think they're pretty good. Their offense makes me think they can be pretty good. I think it's borderline a toss-up against Boston, but I would give Boston a slight edge. But it's not an impossibility to beat them.
Ray, when you were talking about predictable styles in this league, and Hayes and I were having that conversation about Babcock being what seems like to us an awfully predictable coach. Like, he's set a game plan. He's sort of implemented it from training camp, and he's not going to veer. So we had Craig Button has articulated a lot of concerns with their defensive zone coverage because it's so aggressive and so pressuring the puck. And Hayes and I are like, why don't they just drop into a zone now and then, like, you know, to use a basketball term, and maybe be less pressure on the puck to suit the personnel? I mean, does it surprise you that they don't have different looks now and then, or is that just, you know, standard hockey strategy in your mind?
More so the second. You know, in basketball, of course, you see teams change their defenses all the time, and it seems to be okay. The players seem to get it. In football, they're changing coverages every play, and the guys seem to get it. In hockey, I would say, since I've been around the NHL anyway, which was 1985, team has a defensive style, and that's what they play. Maybe if they're up a couple of goals late, they'll alter their forecheck and become more passive. But nobody changes the way they play. It's like you can't get enough of the guys on the same page to change your style, certainly mid-game, or nobody even really seems to change it mid-season.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what we are, and this is what we do. The danger, I haven't heard Craig's evaluation, but the danger with the high-pressure system to me is now with a couple of guys, very mobile guys, out of the lineup on the blue line, the players that are in are not as quick. So as they're playing the same style, they're not getting to the same place to defend as the other guys might. And if you're off by a stride, well, then that gives somebody a chance to make a play. Now the next guy has to pressure, but he's probably a half a step behind because he thought you were going to stop the play, you know, further up the boards. And it just snowballs on you because, man, they've given up some chances, like great double-A chances from dead center. Like the Todd goal yesterday, that looked like a peewee game.
Yeah.
Right? They were all in the corner.
Both D-men in the corner, two of the three forwards in the corner,
The only reason the other guy wasn't there was too far. and Todd gets time to make a move out front. Like, the defensive part of the game around the defense and the way they play, of course, has been the concern since day one, has been the Achilles heel or the apparent Achilles heel. And we'll see if they can lock it up in the next month or so, or getting maybe just Dermott back or Gardner or both, or, you know, maybe that would help for sure, but you can't count on that. You just don't know when they're going to be back.
Well, and these are all tangible issues. You know, you can look at the tape and see it. You can see the breakdown. You can see the system. I think, you know, one of the bigger topics in the city today has been the ability for this team to fight through adversity. You know, in a couple of recent examples, the most anticipated game of the year, you were there. You were in between the benches. It was in New York, and it was brutal. You know, it was terrible. And I don't even think the game on Monday necessarily would factor in here, but I think last night would even more so because, you know, you lost badly at home against the best team in the league, but then Matthews comes out and says, we quit in the third. One of the most popular players on the team in Morgan Rielly goes through a very significant issue and has to defend himself. And then they show up against a bad team who's playing better, but still Chicago's on the outside looking in a bad Western Conference, and they're down 4-0 and getting booed off the ice. Like, you know, speak to it from your own experience, Ray. You know, the idea of knowing in the room collectively that your team has what it takes to fight through adversity, because at some point in the playoffs, it's going to happen. You're going to have to fight through.
Yeah, for sure. Three pretty brutal losses have happened relatively recently, the three that you outlined there, right? Like, I would say the game last night, you know, looking at a couple of the goals early, like those are not Anderson goals from this year. And so all that stress that you talked about, or all that pressure point you talked about the loss to Tampa, the ensuing day around Morgan Rielly, and then you give up a couple of ugly ones early, and then bam, it's 4-0. It happens fast. And so I can see where it gets away. The teams that I've played on that have done well, like, you know, that 93 Islander team, we just fought like hell. We weren't great. Like, we didn't have a great defense, or we had Pierre Turgeon, and, you know, like, we just fought like hell. And it never felt like the game was over. Even maybe to other people it was, and we were dumb enough to keep thinking we had a chance. I believe there are times when you're so skilled that you think the turn is just around the corner. Like, oh, yeah, we'll get that back. You're down 2. Yeah, we can get that back. Because they've done it numerous times this year. Numerous times. It would feel okay. But eventually, as the games go on and you get into 60 and 70 games, you don't come back from that. And the, you know, Babcock's favorite line is, you know, start on time. Well, certainly they didn't do that. Then you're talking about a resilience or a backbone. And it seemed like they panicked. you know, before they know it, like that second, you know, that fourth line, that, you know, I mean, they just got, they got smoked. And all of a sudden they're on for three goals in what, 5 minutes? Like, that's not happening in the playoffs. They're on for one. They're not going to see the ice again.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like, things are going to change a little bit. Maybe that mitigates a little bit of it. But it's easy to say, okay, look, when the games get real, they'll lock in. And we all think that way. We all prepared like that. We're all like, yeah, you know what, the playoffs are around the corner. Well, you know, we'll be ready to go. And there's lots of cases where teams have been terrible and start the playoffs and are great. And teams that are great going into the playoffs, and all of a sudden they lose the first two games at home and they're gone. And then there's lots of times where, you know, coming in, the predictability of how you play from the regular season rolls right into the playoffs. There's enough questions around a very good team in Toronto. I'm in Winnipeg today. They got the same questions about the Jets. They're 1 point up on Nashville. Nashville started 13-3. Since then, they're 26-24-5. Like, that's a terrible year by their standards, right? And so it's going on in other places too. And so I think, you know, Boston's trying to limp their way to the finish line here with, you know, with half a team. And so everybody, I think, is, as you started, Dave, this segment, they're all waiting for April the 10th. They're like, damn, we just want to get there. But there's a month left. There's lots that can happen.
Hey, what do you make much of the fact, Ray, when you break it down, when the Leafs have played a lot of these teams that are elite defensive teams and keep the puck out of the net really well, and, you know, the Islanders come to mind with the Barry Trotz trap, the Coyotes, is, you know, as much as they're not known as a great team, they do keep it out of their net really well, and Tocchet's got that similar type of trapping system. I mean, I broke it down. The Leafs are 7-14-1 against those top 10 defensive teams. Do you see a trend there in terms of their stretch pass game not working against that neutral zone trapping game?
Well, when you know, I saw your article and I read that and I was like, that's pretty interesting. And I guess I felt immediately, and you bring up the stretch pass, is that there are times when you're going to have to adjust. You know, like, again, I'll bring up the Jets because I'm here, but the other night they lost with 5 seconds left. Nick Ehlers tried to make a seam pass in the offensive zone. It got picked off 2-on-1. Boom, it's in the net. Game over with 5 seconds left. And Paul Maurice said the seam pass is not there now, and it's sure as hell not going to be there in a month. Mm-hmm. But we showed remarkable stubbornness to continue to try it. And the reason I bring that up is that if the only way that you advance the puck up the ice is with a stretch pass or most of the time, once you get into the playoffs, right, you're playing the same team over and over. You stretch out, that there's going to be a D standing inside that guy's shirt. You're going to have to find different ways to do it. I think they can. Like, I know they're talented enough to do it. It's just, will they, you know, just keep going right back to the well and keep trying that play over and over? Because the one way you're going to score in the playoffs is not often off the rush. It's going to be about getting it into the zone. It's going to be about keeping the cycles rolling, wearing the other team down, getting a second opportunity. And Babcock's been talking about this all year. And for Toronto's sake, that better not be a predictor of what's going to happen.
I saw that the announcement came out today. The NHL draft lottery is going to be held before the playoffs even start, which is new, and I think smart. I mean, this has become a real go-to event for the National Hockey League and their fans. And I think it's engaging for a lot of different markets. I like this idea. You know, the past couple of years, they've held it like late in April in between the second and third period of a game. And
yeah.
Like it's just like baseball. Baseball finally caught up with the rest of the leagues, and they announced starting in 2020, they're only going to have one trade deadline, which forever was so stupid that they had their own
non-waiver trade deadline.
It was so confusing. It's all about, you know, how can you get the sporting world to focus on you for 20 minutes?
Yep.
Give me 20 minutes of your time. And I think this is a smart move by the NHL because, you know, you where you live in Vancouver, it's going to be all about the draft lottery. They're not going to the playoffs.
No. And what I would tell the teams if I were the Leafs is don't send me your most boring person to sit on the panel.
Right.
Like, keep working at the entertainment part of this because they're just there as a representative. If you win the lottery, it's got to be okay for your guy to stand up and give a fist bump. You got the first pick. Right? Like, why not?
Get fired up. You should be. I mean, for a lot of these teams, that's all they want anyway. You know, like in L.A. and Detroit, they're praying that they win it. They're not. They can't be like, we're disappointed. We're in this position. You knew you were going to be in this position.
Like, I this is where I think it. You know, they've made a good decision here. I'm with you, Brian. It bridges that those few days from the end of the season into the playoffs with an exciting event that everybody's going to, you know, is going to be tuned into or is going to watch in some form, whether, you know, they're just following it as they're driving around. Like, people are going to find out and they want to know. So I think that's a good idea. But don't stop there. Like, figure out how does it become better? Like, if they had the NFL draft in a boardroom like every draft used to be, just think of how boring that is. Now they got those lunatics there that are painting their faces. They're cheering players they don't even know. It's fun to watch. Like, make it an event. And the draft lottery, just a tiny bit of that, but why not? Make it an event.
Absolutely. No, it's made for it. Like, it's because it really is going to change the fortunes of three teams, really, but especially one. You know, that one team, whether it's Detroit or L.A. or Vancouver, or, you know, God forbid, Edmonton, you know, people are going to freak out. And it's great theater. Like, it's really exceptional theater. And for those teams in particular, those markets, the fans, you know, you can goof on the franchises all you want. You know, you can have a take on tanking, and I understand that. But the fans aren't the ones that are guilty of their team being in that position. You know, allow the fans to embrace it.
Yeah, one of the hosts in Vancouver, he's got this thing he calls the Sad Club. And the Sad Club is the teams that have never won the Stanley Cup, Buffalo, Vancouver. And he talks about the Sad Club. It's actually kind of funny. And he's disappointed that Vegas can't even be in the Sad Club yet because they did too well last year. But if you're in the Sad Club and your team draws the top bingo ball, like, it gives you something to latch onto. The season doesn't feel like a complete train wreck for you. And it's just, I don't know, it's just part of the thing that should be fun. It should be fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they're doing it, and I hope they keep pushing and expanding on the entertainment value of it, because it's sitting there for it to be even more fun than it is.
Well, do you think the players, like, want to be involved after the McDavid experience, where McDavid was in the studio and the McDavid face, it became a meme immediately? Like, it went viral immediately that, look at this guy. He just realized that Edmonton won the lottery, and he didn't look overly excited. Like, I wonder, because you can't really train these kids either. Like, that's their life. You know, Joe Fan is going crazy. If you're Jack Hughes, this is going to determine where you're going to play and where you're going to live for the next, you know, 7 years at least.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was, like, his counsel, I don't know if I would want Jack Hughes involved. If I'm the league, I probably would.
Yeah, but so why not have the, you know, the three guys, like this year, you know, there's Kapokako and Hughes, it seemed to be in the general consensus, is the first pick. So have them buy a satellite sitting in a, you know, and so the first pick is made and you go to them after, you know, after they shake hands and all that. So they got 10 seconds to, you know, to gather their thoughts a little bit. But people would want to see them. If you're in a city, then you've never seen what Kapokako looks like, and you end up, and this is going to be one of the guys you might get. Wouldn't it be cool to just listen to him say, yeah, I know this is the next step. I know, you know, I'm ranked high, and it's pretty interesting to see the list, you know, like whatever he's going to say, but people would be able to instantly connect a little bit to him.
Absolutely. Use it. If you're the league, you should be using this as an opportunity to promote, you know, these players. You got to promote them because the NHL and the hockey world, they don't have the built-in system of promotion like basketball does with,
well,
you know, March Madness.
And
yeah, I thought he was a little bit over the top. Like, he claims he doesn't even know who Connor McDavid is, or where he
garbage,
plays.
But he's making the point, can't be dismissed. Like, of course he knows who Connor McDavid is. I mean, that was a bit of a, you know, a whatever. But
right.
Do enough people know who our stars are? Can they identify them? Can they identify with them? And if the answer is no, and I think they've done a better job, the league, over the last, you know, 5 years or so, but more, whatever you can, whatever the guys will agree to, make it easy for them to be engaged. Make it easy for the fans to learn more about the players. Because it's, in the end, the players only need to know one thing. This is all about hockey-related revenue.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, here's a good example, right? You know, two teams have come through town in the last month or so of significance to Toronto fans. One was the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid's only annual visit to Toronto. And they were in town the day before. They played the Leafs. But Connor McDavid was not available to the media for interviews. They didn't practice, and he wasn't available. The other team was the Houston Rockets, reigning MVP of the NBA. James Harden's in town the day before a game against the Raptors. They practice. I'm interviewing James Harden one-on-one. No problem. Hey, you want to come down to our practice? Come on down. Yeah, he'll be available. Doesn't that say something about these two leagues and why one has this massive place in pop cultural significance and the other it lags behind grossly?
Well, it's not all the things, but it's one thing for sure.
It's one 100%. Thing. I'm not saying it's not the whole thing encapsulated.
Like, it's 100% the way that the NBA looks at what they do and how they get their players out there. I remember when Washington was playing Toronto in Game 7 a couple of years ago, and in the morning there had to be 75 media guys standing around Ovechkin. He was standing in the hallway. Like, how about put him on a podium so people can see him? Yeah. Like, the camera is basically the back of some dude's head that's holding the camera for the next shot. Like, get him on the podium. Like, just walk him down the hall. Put him on the podium. Change the backdrop from the Maple Leafs thing to the NHL. Get him up there. Say, okay, he's going to be here for 10 minutes. That's it. Like, yeah. I don't know why that stuff gets missed. I think we're way too protective. And in my opinion, you say to the media, okay, the Capitals are going to be available. It's an off day. I'm just using them because they're in my head. Capitals are going to be available to the media. They're going to be in this area for 15 minutes from 11 a.m. to 11:15. Get in there and get your stuff.
Exactly.
And so everybody would get in there. There'd be 20 guys there. There'd be 100 guys around Ovechkin, and a few would talk to Nick Backstrom and Kuznetsov and Carlson, and there'd be a whole bunch of different stories out, as opposed to when they bring out one guy, and you guys all have to write, and we all have to cover about one guy. How about if there was 15 guys out there with 15 different things to say? It would be more interesting.
Yep. No, 100%. There's no denying that. And, you know, at some point, I think that will likely happen, but it doesn't feel like it's on the horizon.
I don't know about that, Hayes.
At some point.
They fight it hard, Hayes.
And the players have to buy into it, too. I mean, it's a two-way street. The players have to want to do it. Good stuff, buddy. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Yeah, I'm in for the game. By the way, I don't know if you saw the Flyers team picture.
No.
But they had 4 goalies in it. So they got it down from 8. And Byron Defoe, my old teammate in L.A., he tweeted out, he's like, I see the goalies with the good pads are in the front row.
Absolutely. That's the move, isn't it? When you have 8 different goalies playing in a calendar year, that's got to be tough for the photographer.
But so the 2 other goalies were standing in the second row on the end. And I just like, I've never seen that before. 4 guys.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
The old Ray Finkel. Who the hell is that guy? Who is that? That was, you know, that was a picture taken 3 months into the season when 5 goalies have been used at that point.
Yeah, this is way better. We're way more organized.
Way more organized. All right, buddy. We'll catch you in Toronto tomorrow.
Yeah, later on.
There's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.